Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Instagram at ESPN_Chicago. Now, back to more Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000.
If you're a big baseball fan, there's no better way to catch up on what you might have missed the night before. Well, you can watch Quick Pitch. That's an hour, and you get to see Heidi Watney or whoever and do all the highlights and run them down. But you don't get a lot of in-depth on each and every game. So I do both. So I'll watch Quick Pitch, and then I'll sit down by the TV, grab a bowl of cereal, and watch.
What kind of cereal?
Lately, it's been...
Something heart-healthy, obviously.
Once in a while, it's peanut butter Cheerios at times. Peanut butter Cheerios is good.
Huh.
Yeah. They also have peanut butter Captain Crunch, which I...
That rips up your mouth.
Yeah.
Well, it cuts up the inside of my mouth.
You got to let it soak in the milk
for like a day.
But what you do is you sit down and you sit and watch. Sometimes they do yogurt with granola in it. So I'm lying. So
that's age appropriate.
Yeah, it is age appropriate. Like, you need those probiotics. But I sit down and I'll watch MLB Central, where you get 3 hours sometimes, sometimes 2.5, sometimes 2 if there's an 11 o'clock game, and you get to see a breakdown of baseball. And they break it down, and D-Row does it, and Lauren Shahadi does it, and our guy Robert Flores does it. Robert, how are you today?
Hey, Robert.
Hey, guys. How you guys doing?
Good. We're doing great. Absolutely wonderful. Sox and Cubs both lost yesterday, but they always make it interesting. The White Sox are getting a guy back. I always like talking to you because I sit and watch during the week, and you guys have a great time Monday through Friday doing all your stuff, all your different jukebox things and everything else. And then you guys have fun talking baseball. But D-Row, I love when D-Row goes off and grabs a bat and starts showing what he likes and doesn't like. That makes the whole show, and it's so much fun. But when you look at the White Sox, I mean, a lot of people are looking at this team, and sometimes we're a little bit too close. How does the rest of the country see this White Sox team with Tony La Russa as their skipper? Because you guys have touched on just about each and every one of his little missteps.
Well, I think that, look, going into the season, the White Sox were my pick to win the American League pennant. I think that... generally, now that we're in early June, I don't think it's I think the White Sox are the best team in that division. I think they're the most complete team in the division, and they're still able to do it without missing some key pieces. Mm-hmm. So I love their pitching staff. Lucas Giolito was my preseason pick to win the AL Cy Young. He had kind of some bumpy starts early, but I think he's rounding into form. Lance Lynn is, as good as he is, and he is talked about a lot, I still don't think he's talked about enough. Just the fact of how he competes and how he pitches, it's everyone knows what he's throwing, and they still can't hit it. It's remarkable what he does. So I think that they are, I think that they're a real threat to come out of the American League when it's all said and done.
Yeah, you look at it, and... we know Tony's had some things. What were your original opinion of Tony La Russa taking over this team? Because, you know, you got Tim Anderson, you got Giolito, you got Abreu, and guys, and then you bring in a guy like Tony La Russa to be their skipper.
Yeah, I was like, hey, I'm 13 again. It's 1983. Let's go. it was strange and it was a little weird. But that's to be expected. I mean, Tony La Russa, first of all, he's a Hall of Fame manager, and he decides to come back. But when you dig deeper and you think to yourself, Jerry Reinsdorf obviously loves Tony La Russa and has a great affinity for him, and it has been documented. He's talked about the first go-round that La Russa was the manager of the White Sox, and letting him go was one of his big regrets. So I get it. I remember having a conversation with Lucas Giolito about it before spring training. It happened to be he and I were playing video games against one another and streaming it on my Facebook page, but that's another story. And I asked him, and he said, look, Tony's going to be fine. We're going to be great. He's great. We're good. There's not going to be any of the issues that have been brought up about the age gap and the generation gap. Yes, there's been a couple of instances, the what happened in Cincinnati was something that has that certainly created quite a bit of news. But I think overall, generally, so far, the experiment, if that's what you want to call it, has been a good one.
You know, Robert, I am older than you. I just turned 64 a couple weeks ago, and I have no problem telling people that I play MLB The Show. And but
God, I love that.
But I do play it by myself because I'm not good enough to go online and play other.
You'll
people.
Get exposed.
No, I'm not. Well, I'll get exposed for being a bad player. Yeah.
That's what I mean.
Right. Yeah. I play by myself. I'll play against the computer, and I do that. So it took me forever to figure out how to get Yermin Mercedes because he wasn't in the original, and I had to wait. I had to wait till one of the upgrades, and finally he was there, so I had to start my season over. And Yermin hitting with me is not nearly as good as Yermin hitting by himself this year.
Yeah. I mean, that's just one of the stories that has been, you know, I know he kind of cooled off recently, yeah. And then he had the whole thing with the 3-0 pitch and things like that, which was, you know, kind of, for me, it's an exhausting conversation that only seemingly happens when it comes to baseball as a sport and Major League Baseball as an industry. So I love his story. You know, he has become an important part of what they want to ultimately do, and has the league started to adjust? Yeah, so now it's his turn to make the adjustment to the adjustment. But make no mistake, look, it's a cute story and starting 8-for-8 and the whole thing. But look, the guy has hit no matter where he's been, no matter what level. So that shows you that he has a unique skill set. But it also shows just how difficult it is to thrive and succeed at the major league level, because they're constantly, they are so precise and so detail oriented with ways to get you out that, again, you have to make that adjustments once the league has made adjustments to you.
Robert Flores from MLB Central, MLB Network, joining us here on ESPN 1000. Fred and Xander here till 12:30, and then the White Sox pregame show. The other side of town, it seems like we're playing the movie Major League here in town. The Cubs and Jed Hoyer expected them to kind of lose this year, and they'd be able to rebuild this team. And all of a sudden, they say, you know what? We're going to go on out and win. And they are still in first place. They're tied with Milwaukee after losing yesterday, dropping the first three to the Giants. Do you think that the Cubs winning has put them in a bad situation? And what do you think is going to eventually happen as we get to the trade deadline?
I don't think it's necessarily put them in a bad situation, because I don't think it's sustainable. You look at their starting pitching, which is, if you look at the numbers, they are near the bottom when it comes to velocity, contact, swing and miss. There's just not enough there in the starting rotation, and they're asking their bullpen to cover a lot of innings. Is this sustainable for, the trade deadline, July 31st? Yeah, that could be tricky, but I just don't see the Cubs with as good a season as their lineup and some of the players in it are having, specifically Chris Bryant. I just don't think they have enough in the starting rotation to make this a viable threat to make it not only to make it to the playoffs, but win the division. I personally think that all three playoff teams and the two wild card teams will come out of the National League West,
right?
Either the Padres or the Giants. So I don't see the Cubs winning the division. You know what would really help them is they should trade for Yu Darvish. That's who they should.
That name is so familiar.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm weird. But look, if you trade a pitcher like Yu Darvish at the beginning of the season, and you go into the season with that rotation, and, you know, no disrespect to the guys on it, they're all very good players. Jake Arrieta was a dominant pitcher years ago, but clearly he's closer towards the end of his career than the prime. If you trade away Yu Darvish at the beginning of the season, you're saying, at least to me, that you're not serious about making the playoffs. You're not serious
right.
about making a deep run to the postseason. That's what it says to me. You know, obviously there's other factors that have to be considered, specifically financial constraints. Now, should the Cubs be a franchise that has financial constraints? I don't know. That's a whole nother conversation.
Right.
But you know, if you trade away a player and a pitcher like Darvish, that says to me you're not really, you know, the statement is we're prepared not to make a deep run of the postseason. So
now I've seen some local writers say that the Cubs are going to be buyers at the trade deadline. Mm. Now, if we get to that point and, you know, they're still really performing well, does it seem like that would be a detriment in the long run to be a buyer at this point because of what you mentioned, that they just really don't have what they need to sustain a real run?
Well, it depends on what they are. I mean, you know, obviously, with the way things stand now, it would seem to me that starting pitching or starting pitcher would be something that they need desperately. Mm. Well, then you ask yourself, well, what kind of starting pitcher could really change the dynamic? You know, Max Scherzer, maybe. I mean, he's a free agent at the end of the season. The Nationals are kind of towards the back of that division, but I still don't think they're quite out of it yet. And then if you are going to go after some of that, those big names and those big ticket items, what is it going to cost to acquire that? So it is on the surface, I think, like I said, it seems like it's going to be difficult and they're trying to walk a fine line, but I just don't know. I have a feeling by the time we get towards the deadline that the hot run that they're on, they may have cooled, because also look at what the schedule looks like right now. They're obviously in San Francisco. They've lost a couple games there. And then after San Francisco, they go to San Diego.
Yep.
And then they got the Cardinals. And obviously the Cardinals are kind of going through some things. Jack Flaherty's going to be out for a while. So let's just see where things stand, say, in the next couple, 2-3 weeks for the Cubs, and especially as we get closer towards the deadline.
Okay, one last thing, Robert, and I know it's not going to be an easy one to hit in a short period of time, but Major League Baseball has told everybody that they're going to keep an eye on the pitchers, putting stuff on the balls, and then they said, well, they could even hand down 10-game suspensions. Ooh, I don't think they're going to be afraid of that. But have you, I mean, talking to the guys in MLB Central, and I know Trevor Bauer the other day came out and said, if you cut back on this, you're only going to get 15 to 20% of the guys pitching who don't use the stuff. Do you believe it's that high, really? And do you think that baseball can do something about it?
I watch a lot of games.
Yeah.
Mark DeRosa watches way more games than I do, and I watch a lot.
Uh-huh.
And he comments like, there's the some of these guys are making the ball move that for someone, D-Row played in the show for 13 years, and he's like, I've never seen it. Now, look, different training methods, guys are stronger, bigger, faster, got it. But there is a problem. There is a widespread problem. I mean, just look at the highlights that people's. You don't even have to watch the game. Sometimes just look up the videos that come on social media or Twitter, and it's like. So, I think that there's an issue. I don't want a player's or a pitcher's performance to be determined by who can whip up the best concoction. You know, I don't want to have outcomes and championships determined by who has the best science lab in the clubhouse. I don't want that. I don't think anyone else wants that. Certainly Major League Baseball doesn't want it. So I think they're doing their due diligence, trying to figure out a way to, first of all, let the guys know, hey, cut it out, because if you don't, then we will step in. So I think that's a good way to approach it at first. But yeah, I think there is something going on, and hopefully Major League Baseball can find a way to curtail it or even eliminate it.
Well, Robert, can't wait for tomorrow to watch you guys in the morning, 9 o'clock Chicago time, each and every morning, Monday through Friday. Always fun to talk to you. Thanks for jumping in.
Thanks.
Hey, thank you guys. Have a great weekend.
You too.
Thanks. Robert Flores from MLB Central, also MLB.com.
This is Breaking News, sponsored by the Points Bet Sportsbook on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app.
Well, we've got some big news coming out of the NFL here. The Atlanta Falcons are trading Julio Jones to the Tennessee Titans.
Ooh, I was hoping the Niners.
So here's the return. This is from Ian Rappaport. Falcons are getting a 2022 second rounder, and let's see, this isn't very well formatted.
No, it's not.
Atlanta gets the Titans fourth in 2023 and give back their sixth
that's
in 2023.
It.
That doesn't seem like a lot.
No, that seems like nothing, really. A second rounder for Julio Jones?
A second and a sixth, and then you get Julio and a fourth.
Yeah, that's weird. That's real weird. I mean, Julio Jones, when he's on the field.
Right, yeah. And it is worth noting, Julio is one of the most, if not the highest paid receiver in the NFL.
Right.
So given the direction that the Falcons are in, way that they want to move down the road to, you're probably going to have to pay Calvin Ridley at some point. I guess it makes sense. I just
think about the Titans, though, too. I mean, they've tried for receivers. They had Corey Davis.
Right.
They thought was going to be the guy. He wasn't there. They had the running game, but they really had never had the receiver to step up. Now with the Julio Jones there.
Right.
Oh, my God. With Julio Jones and Derrick Henry.
And A.J. Brown.
Yeah.
I mean, the other thing, too, with I remember seeing this earlier in the week where he mentioned something or it came out that he wanted to play with a quarterback with a big arm.
Okay.
This doesn't feel like that move. Now, granted, he didn't get to pick where
right.
he goes.
No.
It's whatever team's going to give back the best haul to the Titans, but or to the Falcons. But I don't know, because this is a team that does not throw the ball a lot.
No.
So it'll be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out.
And we can assume this was the best deal possible. And we don't even think that this was a great return.
Yeah. Well, they figured they had to do something. They wanted to get something done before, you know, before everything else, before, you know, camp started and things mm-hmm. like that. So very interesting. Julio Jones going to the Titans. Last hour, I told you I would play a thing about Mike Marshall, and I forgot to do it. So we'll do that when we come back. Also got the White Sox starting lineup. Jose Abreu out of the lineup. Adam Engel's in it. We'll talk about the lineup. We'll talk about closers in Major League Baseball. We'll get to more. 312-332-3776. We're here till 12:30. And then it's White Sox pregame as they have Dylan Cease going against Detroit today. A 1:10 first pitch. You'll catch it all right here on ESPN 1000.
Fred and Xander
on ESPN 1000. Also available on demand on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
So whenever I'm hosting, I work Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday this week, and I'm here tomorrow for Waddle and
Sylvie. That's
Sylvie,
a lot of work for you,
Brian
pal.
Hale.
You're going to be okay.
I don't know. Thank goodness I got a couple days off after that. But I always try to watch, pardon the interruption, because I don't watch a lot of I don't watch any NBA. I don't watch any NHL. I want to know some of the stories I may have missed or stuff like that. So I watched Pardon the Interruption. So I watched Pardon the Interruption with Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon as much as I can. I'll DVR it and I'll watch it again. So I'm watching on Wednesday, and they had a couple of really interesting things. One of them was, and I mentioned it and referred to it earlier, about the relief pitcher Mike Marshall. I remember watching him pitch. He passed away the other day, and the guys on PTI did a little thing for him. Give it a listen.
A melancholy trails to Mike Marshall, one of the greatest relief pitchers of all time, who holds the record for relief appearances in one season in both leagues, for Minnesota in the American League, for the Dodgers in the National League. He died at 78. If you grew up in the era of the closer, your idea of a relief pitcher is a guy who comes into the game in the ninth inning, pitches that inning, and goes home. He does this maybe two or three times a week. In the era before the closer, Mike Marshall pitched multiple innings multiple times a week. In 1974, Marshall won the Cy Young because he pitched 208 innings as a reliever. He pitched in 106 games for the Dodgers that year. He finished 83 of them. At one point, Marshall pitched in 13 consecutive games. No reliever will ever approach these numbers again. Marshall pitched for 9 teams over 15 seasons. And, of course, they called him Iron Mike because he went out there basically every day.
Yeah, and now there would be some analytics-obsessed GM calling down to the dugout to tell the manager to get him out because he gave up 2 bloop singles to right. And this is one of the major things wrong with baseball.
Yeah, and it is one of the major things wrong with baseball. And you see guys using the bullpen so often. What Major League Baseball is thinking about doing is limiting the number of pitchers you can have on your roster. And by doing that, you also are going to be forced to have your starters go longer.
Right.
Okay. And by doing that, you're not going to be able to have your starters come out and throw as hard as they can for four innings, they're going to have to pace themselves a little bit.
Like they used to do.
And by doing that, you'll get more balls in play because the ball will be hit more often. It's not a bad thing. It all could work because all baseball's talked about is putting the ball in play more, having more action. Well, if the pitchers aren't throwing 100 miles an hour in the first inning and because they're trying to pace themselves to go six or seven innings instead of four or five innings,
right. Then
it might be better for the game of baseball. And here you see a guy, Mike Marshall, 103 games he pitched one as a reliever.
I remember him just working every time I would see a game. He worked just about every game. I'm really fixated. I didn't realize he was 78.
Yeah.
Where has the time gone?
I know.
Seriously.
I know.
But yes, that is such old school approach. But I'm wondering how the players union would react to this, because less pitchers on a roster, which means less opportunities for some in the bigs.
You'd probably have the same number of players, just less pitchers.
Right. But I'm saying for the segmented pitcher position.
Yeah.
I don't know if that would be an issue, but yes, I agree with you in that the residual effect would be getting more excitement back in the game.
Well, I think if they limit it, there's 26 players on a roster now. They upped it from 25 a year ago. So if you have 12 or 13 pitchers is the max, 13 pitchers, 13 position players, and you can't have more than that. You have five starters. It still gives you eight relievers. That should be enough. But, I mean, you look at yesterday, the Tigers used three. Sox only used two. 2 days ago, when I was sitting here yesterday, on Friday, the Cubs, the White Sox, the Tigers, and Giants combined to use 24 pitchers. 24 pitchers in one game.
Right.
Each game used 12. One team used 7, one guy used 5, and the other two both used 6.
Hey, we need all those pitchers for those lopsided games so we don't have to watch a first baseman pitch.
And you should have it where a situation where, a reliever can come in and go an inning or two or three. And that's the way baseball always used to be. And it's all changed because it was always more important to have an extra bench guy than, extra relievers. Now the whole game has changed. Everything's flipped. You got guys trying to go four innings. You want to pull guys before they get to the lineup for the third time and all that stuff.
What's that? It's that push-pull, right?
Oh, God.
You have more relievers, so now they're using them in shorter stints, and you have to reverse that trend.
Yeah. So I'm interested to see if baseball can do that.
You know what? I'd do that before I'd bring bigger bases.
Well, in bigger bases, they say, we're going to put bigger bases in so maybe there'll be more steal attempts. Is that what's missing in baseball is stolen bases?
I don't think so.
No. And I know it's a stupid thing.
Hey, if we're making them bigger, faster, stronger, why can't they steal bases without a bigger base?
What they do in softball, and I know in some softball leagues, they have the base where it's in fair territory and then in foul territory. Right?
The orange bag.
Israel's the line.
Yeah. So I don't understand why he does this. Anytime Nick Madrigal hits a ground ball, he is always running on the infield grass. Always running on the infield grass. I don't know what's wrong with him. I don't know why he does that, but he runs on the infield grass all the time.
That drives me nuts.
It's ridiculous. Now, I know technically the base is on the inside of the bag. They called, an umpire made a call about a week or so ago where the guy was on the line. And he got called out for running inside the line. He's on the line. The bag's in fair territory. You can't call him out. They did. It's so silly. But if the base is in foul territory, then it's a lot easier. You hit the ball, you're always got to be running on the other side of the line. But I can't believe it. Every time I see Nick Madrigal hit a ground ball, he's running on the infield grass. He's going to get called out anytime the guy hits him with the ball. You're out of the baseline. Out of the baseline.
The only thing he has working for him is his height.
One of these days,
keep under that.
One of these days, we gotta ask him. I gotta get on White Sox Weekly, or we gotta get him on the show and ask him, why is it you're always running? I think when he swings, his impetus takes him into the field.
He just runs. I do.
Yeah. I And watch it. I mean, you'll see it each and every time. 312-332-3776. We got more from PTI. Another thing that it's nice anytime somebody agrees with me, I want to play it. I played Greeny agreeing with me earlier. He doesn't like the sand.
He's like the Fred Greatest Hit Show.
Yeah. And I also have Michael Wilbon agrees with me, something I've been preaching for years and years and years. We'll get to that when we come back. 312-332-3776. Jesse will jump on in at noon. He can let us know what the Cubs are doing after they've lost three in a row. And also, Nick Castellanos talked about a couple things this week. One of them was funny. The other one is how Major League Baseball may have to crack down a little bit on some of these rules. We'll talk about that and more and your calls here on ESPN 1000.
You're listening to Fred and Xander. This is Chicago's home for sports.
Live stream ESPN 1000 or take a listen to our other shows on demand. It's the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
So we'll hear from the guys from PTI in a second. White Sox lineup is out. And Adam Engel is in it. Jose Abreu is not.
Throw him right.
Yep.
Throw him right in there. Get some work today.
You got Tim Anderson at short. Jake Lamb in left. Moncada at third. Mercedes moved up to DH at the cleanup position. Yasmani Grandal will walk a few times as a catcher, hitting fifth. Adam Eaton in right.
Oh, we're doing predictions.
Yeah. Adam Eaton in right. You have Andrew Vaughn at first base. He's playing first base today as Abreu gets a day off. Yep. Yeah, he came back yesterday. Adam Engel is in center field. He's back. And Nick Madrigal is your second baseman. Your pitcher is Dylan Cease, 6-0 with a 229 against the Detroit Tigers. So that's a good thing. Let's go to Jim out in Aurora before we hear from the PTI guys. Jim, what's happening today?
Hey, Jim.
Yes, sir. Thank you again, Fred, for everything you've done the past few weeks. And I was looking forward to meeting Xander out there. I didn't get an opportunity.
You were busy taking care of all the bands the whole day.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I can tell.
Anyhow, you're talking baseball here. Baseball has a great opportunity now, whether or not they jump on it or not, to fix everything with the collective bargaining. Theo's on the board. You've got the players union, MLB owners. They all have to get together. They all have to talk this out. And they're probably, let's see what direction they go on this. They've got to get it right.
Yeah, they got to figure some stuff out to make the game a little bit more, I don't know, I'd say watchable for everybody. I mean, as a fan of the game, I love the game the way it is. I'll always love the game.
But the thing is, they've got the real, real fans. They want more.
Yeah.
And you got to bring the, the glitz.
Yeah. It's tough. It's tough bringing the new fans in, Jim, and that's what they're trying to do. And, I guess they're trying with new uniforms and different hats and all the other stuff. Hopefully, I don't want to see them move the pitcher's mount, the rubber back. I don't want to see bigger bases. But if they can just change some things and just make them a little bit better, a little more action to keep the fans' interest, I think it'll be great.
Very good. Thank you again for everything, Fred.
Oh, my pleasure, Jim. Thanks a lot. And like I said, Jim's like the road guy for the Chicago Six band and
Mongo Palooza.
Yeah, he was there yesterday. He was there helping all the bands, the Dancing Noodles, and Prize Fighter afterwards.
Yeah, I wish I would have met him too. But I wasn't about. He was working.
Oh, all day long he was working till he was there before I got there at 2, and he was there when I left at 7. So right. He was smart. He had a hat on.
Yeah.
I should have wore a hat. I got like 80 hats at home.
Jesse, if he were in studio, would keep his glasses on
yeah.
the whole time.
I couldn't.
Because that glow on your forehead.
I could not find a Bears hat because I'm a Niners fan. I wasn't going to wear a Niners hat to a Mongo.
It would be poor form.
One day I was in a golf outing and Alex Brown saw my golf clubs and they all had 49er head covers. He goes, "What the hell?" And I said, "I didn't know I'd be." He goes, "Don't worry. I don't care." So he was just giving me crap. And I said, So I couldn't find a Bears hat yesterday. I found an Urlacher 54, but it was one of those. Have you seen any of those caps where they have the built-in elastic? They're not the snapback hats.
Yeah, they're fitted.
Yeah. They're not fitted either. They like stretch. But the problem is if you have a big head and you get one of these hats that stretches, they put pressure on your head all day long.
Right.
And it gives you a headache.
Right.
So I said, I don't want to wear that all day in the sun and with a headache.
Well, you probably get some that actually fit your melon.
Yeah. Well, that's why when I buy them, when I do buy fitted, some are 7 5/8, some are 7 1/2. It all depends on the make of the hat.
Right.
So you got to try them out. If you order them online, sometimes you go, too big, too small. Yeah, nothing worse than that, spending $30 on a hat that's
too small. I actually have my socks hat that matches your jersey.
Yeah.
Is one size too big. And I thought I measured in everything, yeah. And it's like, that kind of looks big.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay, by the way, yesterday when the game started, Jason Benetti had the City Connect jersey on, which he looked great. It looked wonderful. Steve Stone had the Chai hat on. He had the hat on over the headphones. Steve, it's real easy.
That's really weird. Seriously, I didn't see that.
Take the headphones off.
Yep.
Put the hat on.
Yeah.
The headphones.
We
go.
Do that a lot in here. I'm not wearing a hat almost today, all the but time. You put it right
anytime,
over the hat.
Anytime we wear a hat.
That's the weirdest look.
I go, why would you put...
Wow, and he was on camera that way.
Oh, yeah.
Somebody want to tell him not to do that?
Somebody should have. I mean, anybody on NBC Sports could have said, Steve, before we come back on air, take your headphones off, put your hat on, unless he thought it was funny. I mean, I said, oh, God, I can't believe that. Okay, so again, the guys from PTI on Wednesday talking about one of the saddest things that happened in baseball and one of the coolest things, and they talk about the whole thing. Give it a listen. This was on Wednesday this past week on June 2nd.
Not so happy anniversary, Armando Galarraga. On this day 11 years ago, the Tigers pitcher lost his bid for a perfect game with two outs in the ninth inning on an incorrect call by first base umpire Jim Joyce. Joyce quickly admitted to blowing the call, and Galarraga famously forgave him, adding without irony, nobody's perfect. Joyce told a room of reporters, quote, I had a great angle on it. I just missed the damn call. This is a history call, and I kicked the bleep out of it, unquote. Recalling what happened afterwards, Joyce would later say, quote, I basically broke down. I told the press exactly how I felt. Then when they leave, I can finally come back out into the locker room. And the last person who comes through that door is Armando Galarraga. He doesn't say a word. He just comes over and hugs me.
Tony, for people who have spent approaching 100 years together telling stories, it's a better story this way as it played out, except for Galarraga. But now they were simply what you should be able to do is have somebody without going over to the dugout, just be on the phone, eye in the sky, just immediately radio down and say, he's out, leave the field, perfect game. And it didn't happen that way. And it's a hell of a story now because that hug, there's a movie in there somewhere, Tone, isn't there?
There is indeed.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. But the thing he agrees with me on is the eye in the sky. There's no reason for the two umpires to walk over, put a headset on, call the people in New York. Just have a guy upstairs like you or me watching the game, and we can buzz down to the home plate umpire or the crew chief or whoever and say, the call's wrong, fix it. It's that easy.
Right, we've talked about that. And talk about making the game go a little faster.
Yeah.
I the idea of a challenge is fine by me.
Right.
Let's just get it going.
Yeah.
And I think I mentioned Steve Stone once mentioned there if they're not going to have the eye in the sky, I don't think that was part of that conversation. But he said there's got to be 30 seconds or a minute.
Right.
Maybe it was a minute.
Yeah.
If you don't have something within a minute, then the call stands.
Well, the worst part about the whole thing is it takes 30 seconds or 20 seconds now for them to decide if they're going to challenge or not. Then it takes another 20 seconds for the umpires to put the headset on
actually
and walk over
to put everything on.
It's so
stupid.
And
then it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah, and I'm not talking about just baseball. All sports.
Yep.
Hockey does the best job of it. It's amazing that hockey does a good job of any of this stuff. But hockey, when they go to the side and they go to their place.
But they go to New York, too.
No, but they come back with a decision, like, immediately.
No, they do. They do. It's a quicker reaction. But again, I guess if you have a central unit to do that, yeah, you know, it's a lot better than having several different units in all the games that go on one night.
Think how hard it is in hockey when they have to pull back because a guy's skate was offside. His skate was just off the ice, and a play is offside, and they still do it like this. It's amazing how
quick
they do it.
And that's what I'm saying, to have the central office in New York reviewing. That's not the problem as long as it's a quick review.
Yeah.
No matter where they are.
We talked earlier today about Major League Baseball, how they're trying to cut back on some of the cheating. And Nick Castellanos, one of the former Cubs, now one of the leaders in hitting in the National League for the Cincinnati Reds, he talked about it at a show the other day. And also Liam Hendricks, White Sox closer, talked about pitchers and doctoring the baseballs. We'll hear from both of them. We come back in just a couple minutes right here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. You're listening to Fred and Xander.
This is Chicago's home for sports. ESPN 1000.
Jesse Rogers is going to join us in a couple minutes at 12 noon. Don't forget, 12:30 is the pregame show for the White Sox as they get ready to take on the Tigers once again. It'd be nice to take at least 3 out of 4 since they can't sweep
the
four-game series.
Yeah. We need it. Adam Engel, we're going to see him back on the field.
That'd be nice. And I was a guy that said, listen, if Adam Engel could just hit 250, he can play the outfield for the White Sox. Well, he hit 295, I think it was last year. So he's now he's back after being injured, and then he re-injured himself during rehab, and that he's all ready to come back. So he'll be starting in center field today. Abreu has the day off, but you know what? He can always pinch hit late in the game. You know, unless Tony's one of those guys where, listen, if you get a day off, you get a day off, and I think that's stupid too. Well, I've heard people say that. Well, you tell the guy he's got the day off, he's sure got the whole day off. No, if you need him, you can use him.
Well, the intent to give somebody a day off, I get that. But when push comes to shove,
off.
Well, right.
I know,
no, I'm saying when push comes to shove, you have to have everybody available.
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of times they'll do that. They give a guy today off because he gets today off, and they'll have tomorrow off, and then he'll play a nice big stretch
of
games.
If there's anybody in the lineup that could use a day off, he's been a warrior.
Oh, he's been getting nicked up going to get balls on the along the screen and down the first base line and things like that.
I'm sure the ankle isn't perfect.
Yeah. So the White Sox, they wrap up the series with Detroit today. Then they have Toronto Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then they go to Detroit for 3 games, and then they have Tampa back home. They play Houston, a 4-game series at Houston, will not be easy. A couple games in Pittsburgh. They don't have the toughest schedule in the world. I mean, Houston's pretty good. They play Pittsburgh, Seattle again, Minnesota with 4.
Well, Tampa's certainly good.
You know, they're in a division where, you know, they're in a division where they play some bad teams because Minnesota was expected to be good. They're not good. They're struggling. All of Major League Baseball, and this is going to get even more and more important. I'm going to let you play these, Tyler, so mine don't screw up. The Chris Rose rotation, that's a podcast, and Nick Castellanos was on it. This is the same podcast he was on where he said he gave up his smartphone, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He gave up his smartphone. He said the phone was, I wasn't running the phone. The phone was running me. He said, now I pay $11 a month and I got unlimited calls and texts.
Is he doing an ad for somebody?
No. He just said he got rid of it. And, you know,
hey, I don't disagree with him. I pick up my phone and look at it before I realize what I'm doing.
A lot of times, if
we're a slave to the machine.
If and when, whenever I'm out of this business and not working in this anymore, nothing wrong with a flip phone. Except you probably don't get
pictures. Or how about one of those phones on the wall with a rotary dial?
Yeah, no, I'm not going that way.
You're not going that far back?
I've got one if they can just reconnect it. Yeah. But so Castellanos talked about that, but he also talked about MLB cracking down on things.
Here's my thing, right? I look at it from more of a logical standpoint. Is it illegal or is it not illegal to put stuff on a ball?
It's illegal.
It's illegal. Yeah. The league obviously knows that they're doing it, but the league doesn't care. They don't care, you know, because if it was really a problem that they wanted, they would figure out how to, they'd put people in the bullpen to check gloves, to check hats, to whatever, you know, like the league would do something about it. But honestly, I don't think it's that much I don't think it's that important to them, you know?
Should it be, Nick?
Listen, if I truly start speaking my mind, I usually get in trouble. You know, but it's just the league has to figure out if it wants it to be illegal or not and stick by it, you know, like it's and then for the pitchers to say, you know, like, oh, well, we need it for control so we don't hit you in the head. You know, fine. Drill me. I'm on first base. That helps my OPS and I get paid for that. You know, sacrifice some velocity for some control, you know, but if the league just says like, oh, you know, yeah, you're not supposed to be doing that. But you see pitchers Just tell us that. Just tell us that you don't give a shit. So at least we can. So at least we, as hitters, we know. You know, it's obvious. You know, you can see the pitchers that go to their spots or go to their things and go to their gloves and go to their whatever. You know, so I honestly don't pay much attention to it. You know, everybody else about it, but just my frame of mind right now. The moment that I start about it, I give them an advantage, and I don't want to give these dudes not one slight advantage over me. So sticky, no sticky, throw it over the dish. It's going to get hit hard.
I love him. I think he's exactly right. Everything he said, if Major League Baseball wanted to crack down on it, they could. It'd be really simple for them to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's obvious. What he's drawing out is obvious to everybody.
Yeah.
And guess what? That's
a double standard.
Yeah. It's working for him. He's on a 21-game hitting streak.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just hits the ball.
Throw it over the dish.
And he's right, though, too, where he said, listen, if you know, you're worried about hitting me, throw the ball a little bit. Don't throw the ball quite as hard and have better control over it. And by doing that, there'll be more balls put in play. Everything will work out. So if they get rid of this stuff, maybe everything will work out. Maybe this is the whole panacea, the one thing that needs to be taken care of.
And then can we put the ball back to the way it was instead of deadening the ball? But you see what's happening, right?
I don't know.
You're right. If they made this adjustment, everything else just might fall into place naturally. Right.
Pitchers have to throw a little bit slower, which means they don't throw their arm out, which means they can go six or seven innings, which means they don't need as many guys in the bullpen. It all, it's, you know, it's like they're rolling, you know, the snowball rolling downhill. And it could all work. Now, Liam Hendricks, it was funny. I just left here yesterday doing a show till 10:30. I'm in my car, and I get a message from Tyler. And when I left here, there was a little bit of a technical problem. So I was hoping he wasn't telling me that I had to come back here. So anyway.
Do it all over. We need to do over.
So I'm getting on the expressway, and all of a sudden he says, you probably heard Liam Hendricks. And I had just gotten in my car. I was on the phone doing something else, obviously through the thing. I wasn't holding my phone. So Liam Hendricks talked about pitchers and doctoring the baseballs.
Yeah, I mean, it's a rampant issue throughout the league. It's something that has gone on for decades, not just recently, but recently it's gotten to a little bit more of a scientific level where people are now using certain like devices, whether it be a Rapsodo, whether it be a TrackMan, whether it be something like that, to be able to kind of track the differences and put that out there. And I am all for policing it more and doing whatever they need to do, because at the end of the day, we want to try and level the playing field, because this is going to benefit everyone in the long run. Yeah, it's going to affect some pitches now, but it's going to be great in the long run, because all of a sudden that offense is going to come back a little bit. That fan base is going to be not so wavering and not using this as an excuse. And then all of a sudden when pitches start getting ahead of it again, then we have the bragging rights of like, well, you complained so much last time, we took it away, and now look, we're still doing it. Now maybe it's on you guys. Maybe it's on the hitters. Maybe it's a different approach. It's not, I wouldn't say necessarily guys trying to hit too many home runs or anything like that, but I think once you eradicate the substances or whatever MLB wants to do with that, I think there needs to be a come to Jesus moment where it's like, okay, well, what can we do to help increase offense? Oh, let's pay guys for singles. Let's pay guys to get on base. Let's pay guys to do this rather than just let's pay guys for OPS or the home runs or the RBIs or anything like that. Let's pay the guys who are hitting singles like the Nick Madrigals of the world, who are going to hit 315 to 360 every year and maybe hit 2 to 5 home runs in a season. And let's pay those guys what they're worth instead of, your OPS is down or your slugging's down or you weren't at a league, you weren't above an average hitter because you had no power numbers. That needs to go away. The analytics side of that needs to go away, and pay guys for getting on base, pay guys for getting singles and doubles.
And it's so funny, too, because, you know, analytics took over the game. Tyler, it's got to be 20 years ago. It's got to be since you love baseball.
It's pretty much been a part of my life.
Yeah.
My entire life.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I've never heard a baseball player say any of that.
Yeah.
The idea of paying, you know, for singles and doubles. Yeah. And
no, I mean, and I'm just happy he thinks Nick Madrigal could hit 5 homers this year.
Right. That was a little ambitious.
Yeah, well, he's got 2 now.
He said, and up to 360?
Yeah.
I'll take that.
I would take that, too. We'll talk to Jesse Rogers, what he thinks about all this. He sees more baseball than any of us. We'll talk to Jesse. We come back in just 2 minutes here at ESPN 1000.
This is Fred and Xander on ESPN 1000, also available on demand on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
Chicago's home for sports, ESPN 1000.
ESPN 1000, we're back, and we're going to talk to Jesse in a minute here. Fred, you got some
my
technical?
My headphones completely went out. Tyler was talking to me, and then all of a sudden, I got nothing.
Can you hear me, Fred?
Yeah, I can hear you because you're standing about 2 feet from me. Jesse's not standing 2 feet from me, and there's nobody happier about that than Jesse, I'm sure.
Hey, Jesse, if you were in studio, you'd have your glasses on the whole time. Fred's got quite the impressive sunburn on that big forehead.
Oh, yeah. I was in Mongopalooza all day yesterday in the sun, and I forgot to wear a hat, and that was a mistake. So.
I never forget. No. That's one thing bald guys never forget is that
glare that's coming off of Fred's head is pretty impressive.
Well, I had a bunch of 49ers hats in my car, but I didn't think I should wear a 49ers hat with Hampton and Mongo there, you know. So I said, I'll just go without the hat. So there was no need. Baseball, Cubs, an important series, and things didn't work out so well so far, have they?
Yeah, so far not so good. Very predictable, to be honest, Fred. They had that great run. They were playing great baseball, a lot of it at home, and it just worked out well for them in May. This was bound to happen, a little regression. West Coast trips. Fred, you know this with the White Sox.
Yep.
Always goofy. You can't put your finger on why. Maybe it's simply the time zone. I mean, is the time zone the reason that Javi bobbled a ball two nights ago? You know what I mean? Like, you just never know why these things happen. But two things happened at once. They went on the West Coast, and they were absolutely also due just to have some regression. So none of these three games surprised me. It's a weird ballpark to play in when you haven't played there in 2 years. A lot of new players, a lot of relievers getting their first taste on the road like this. So I always say, you know, when you go out west, 500-ish road trip would be nice. Now they have, what, four games left, so they better get moving just to get close to 500 here. You know, it's a seven-game trip, so they can't go 500. But you get what I'm going with here. It was due. It was predictable. Now let's see if they can turn around a little bit, play better baseball the last four games.
This guy Abbott they brought in yesterday looked pretty good. I mean, you probably knew who he was. He was with the team last year, the alternate team most of the year last year. But he actually looked pretty good for two innings yesterday.
Well, it's amazing. They're debuting these relievers left and right.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are from the Cubs system, meaning Theo and Jed drafted them. Now, we go back 2 years, you couldn't find a Cubs pitcher that was drafted that was on the team. You know what I mean? It's been great to see these guys get here. And no matter what happens in the standings this season, this will benefit them down the road. Already, success out of Nance, success out of Keegan Thompson. Abbott did look good. So all good news on that front, seeing these guys get up here and perform. Now they have to do it over and over and over again, you know, before we say these are successful draft picks. But I like what the Cubs are doing. They're competing, they're winning, they're getting valuable innings out of guys, and they're getting experience out of these guys.
Before you came on, we played a couple of cuts, one from Nick Castellanos and one from Liam Hendricks, talking about doctoring baseballs and how MLB says they're going to crack down on it. Have you heard anything else? Because I know the baseball said that they might even hand down 10-game suspensions. Ooh, that's not going to stop anybody.
Well, we'll see. I mean, the first one might not, but if the second one is 20 and so on and so forth, it might make a difference. But you're not wrong. Guys are still going to try to get away with it. But if we see a slew of suspensions, that might change. Buster only has a lot of the details, or, you know, early details. They haven't really hammered it out just yet, but it's getting closer. Go to ESPN.com for that. They're putting a lot of onus on the umpires, and the umpires are in the middle of these discussions, how exactly they're going to police this thing. And here's the thing. I think in the past, managers would have gotten upset with umpires because are they policing both sides? Like, you know, the Joe West thing. That's why Mike Schilt was so upset. Why Gio Gallegos on this day? Why us on this day?
Right.
But if umpires do their diligence on both sides, and this could be, you know, often, who knows, early on, every inning. Yeah, every pitching change. If they do their due diligence, then I think managers will back off, and maybe this thing will find a level playing field. But the interesting thing will be, okay, they're going to crack down on some of the obvious stuff. Then what do pitchers do, right? It's like when the steroids had to go, so to speak, underground. Like guys start taking gummy bears and stuff like that, right? What will pitchers do to avoid getting caught? But initially, I think, you know, maybe this will help. It certainly didn't help to threaten like the first 2-3 months here. But maybe actual following through on penalties and kicking guys out will make a difference.
I know your wife and your family love having you at home. is there a chance that they will see you leave for a while? I mean, are things going to change the way you cover some of these things?
Yeah, coverage is actually changing. So the first step is we are back on the field for batting practice starting tomorrow. Tomorrow. Now I'm not on the road with the Cubs this week.
Right.
So Tuesday, Sox game, 3:30 p.m. I'll get to be on the field for batting practice. That's very exciting. Not so much because of batting practice,
right,
but what happens is players are walking around, milling around. You can finally get to talk to them one on one. We have to wear masks while we're on the field. There's no social distancing requirements, so that's good. But basically, yeah, we're on the field for batting practice. We can talk to players, maybe, you know, put them on the radio as we like to do during the week with the guys.
Sure.
And get back to that. Now, we're not back in the clubhouse yet, and we're still doing Zooms before and after games. So baby steps. I think I'll probably start traveling a little bit, especially with the Cubs after the All-Star break. In fact, I know that I will. I don't know when we're going to get back in the clubhouse, but at least we're back on the field.
Okay, I'm looking at the Cubs road. They go to New York.
Yeah, that's this month, though.
Yeah, okay, let's see.
I probably won't do it till after the All-Star break.
Oh, you can go after the All-Star break?
Yeah.
Oh, they're in Arizona.
Yeah, they go to Arizona. They go to St. Louis. I'll definitely be there. The trade deadline is July 31st. They're
right
in Washington, so I'll go there. And I'll probably, you know, if the Sox – obviously the Sox will be in the race. I'll probably go to some road games down the stretch for them. But, you know, even being on the field for batting practice, like, teams don't take batting practice every day.
Right.
So it might just be me. Like, where is everybody? You know? So it's baby steps. It's some access, but it's not the real access that we all want.
Okay. Yesterday, Tony La Russa decided to give the bunt sign, and everybody seemed to flip out. And he was not very patient with his response. And it was funny because Xander said the exact same thing. Basically, Tony yesterday was the Tony he was back in 1983 when I covered him. He was the impatient,
a little snarky.
Yeah, like was there a runner at second and third? What was the score? Or first and second? Right,
first and second.
Yeah.
Nobody out.
Yeah, what was the score? Was the go ahead run at first? And he was asking questions instead of just coming out and answering. Trying to, you know, make the guy feel bad. I'm sure this continued a little bit today, right?
Well, actually, today he was great. So, I mean, there's heat of the moment stuff after the game. The conversation continued today about the bunt, but I thought he was great. I mean, I'm turning into someone that's biased. I like Tony. He's actually more honest than most guys, and I think there's been maybe twice where he's got a little snippy, like maybe twice. And when you consider all the tough questions he's had to deal with of his own doing, right, he's brought them on. I have no problem with Tony's attitude or demeanor. I think he's been great. And I love talking baseball with him. He was great pregame today. He went on and on about this bunt thing. Now, I do disagree with him. He defended it on several levels and then sort of gave an example. Let's hear from Tony right now, and then I'll explain what I'm talking about here. Here's Tony on the whole bunt situation.
This is the newest part of the strategy issue. Not so much. It was there towards the end of my career, but the time afterwards, there's a lot of opinions about, you know, like, I'll give you the classic example. Man on second base, nobody out. You know, there are a lot of people in position of responsibility upstairs that don't believe in ever giving up an out to advance a base. They're always looking for the crooked number. So they want three guys to go up there, maybe, you know, swing, maybe hit a two-run homer or get the runs that way. And, I can't agree with that. There's sometimes where you need the run, and you look at the guy at bat, and if he can be productive to advance a runner to third, and you're skillful at getting the run home, that run is a difference.
Okay, so let's analyze that for a second. I want to focus on one thing.
Yeah.
Now, earlier in the pregame conversation with him there in the Zoom, he said, you know, I have no problem with second guessing. Or actually, he said, you should write down what you think before the play plays out and then see if you're right or wrong. Like,
sure,
don't second guess, in fact, first guess. So this is what I would have wrote down if that's what I was doing. Do not bunt with first and second, nobody out. What did he do there? Why did he go to an example that didn't happen yet? He went to what he called a classic example, man on second, nobody out. Well, mm-hmm. Why is that more classic than first and second? What I'm getting at is I completely agree with him. There are times to bunt with a man on second, nobody out. I think it's a losing play with first and second. Because what happens? That third baseman turns into a first baseman. All he has to do is catch the ball for a force out. Yesterday was a great example. The runner is probably safe if that's a tag play. But the third baseman doesn't have to worry about that. So I think you lose your little advantage when you allow that play to be a force play. But, you know, Tony didn't use the first and second example, which happened to him. He used the man on second. So I feel like he almost realized the man on second is a better debate than first and second. First and second, to me, is a losing play. Now, if it's an absolute perfect bunt, the guy's going to be safe at
right.
third. But most of the time, that's a bang-bang play at third. And the difference between a force and a tag can be the difference between safe and out. So that was my problem with the play. I don't like bunting first and second. I don't have a problem with just a man on second.
It was a brutal bunt because it was right to the first baseman. And anywhere, it should have been to the third baseman. But the funny thing was, and it's not coming up because it didn't play out, is he had Zach Collins try to bunt twice. With a runner at second, nobody out. And then Collins eventually walked. And Collins, I mean, because Benetti was questioning it all the way through with both hitters, you know. Yeah, and
he was. I was listening as well.
Yeah.
I think he really sort of agreed with me. The first and second bunting was weird. Because then you add the layers to it. Derek Holland was absolutely on the ropes, okay?
Right.
You give him an out. Here's my – when I coached Little League – okay, I'm going to go there. When I coached Little League
– oh, you have how many Major League victories? I'm sorry.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But part of the thinking, I think, is does the other team like your decision? And if you ask A.J. Hinch in that moment with Derek Holland on the ropes, hell, I'll take an out. I'll take the out. I don't care if you advance the runners or not. So it's like if the other team likes your decision, it's probably the wrong decision.
Right.
And I guarantee you the Tigers liked – getting it out, whether it be at first or third. Obviously, they loved getting it third.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Holland was on the ropes. And I think, you know, Tony kind of mentioned that today, but I don't think he really addressed it. Like, I agree with him. You have to have a feel for the situation. And the situation was, I think Holland had faced eight Sox batters this season. All eight had reached or
right,
something.
Right.
And I saw the guy up close with the Cubs. I like Derek Holland, but he's not the Derek Holland.
No, he's
old.
Not. No.
You know, Sox know that too. So, I think there were a couple factors that Tony did not take into consideration in bunting. Now, I agree. He picked the right guy to bunt. Yeah, Mendek should be able to get it down, but he put it down in the wrong place.
Right, well, and the execution was
bad. Yeah, the execution was bad. And the other thing that he did bring up, though, and one of our callers brought it up, too, is you also – it's tough to say with the analytics and all the other stuff and the run expectancy and stuff, a lot of times it doesn't take into play who's coming up next. You had the top of the order coming up next. You had Anderson and he had Madrigal. The problem was that neither one of them got a hit and nobody
right.
scored. And
well,
so if one of them does, well, first of all, the bunt didn't work. So now it was first and second with one out instead. And, you know, T.A. almost hit into a double play. And then Anderson or Madrigal makes a ground out. And they don't score after having first and second, nobody out. So that was the tough part. Because after that, they only had one guy on base in the last three innings. That didn't help either.
Tony is completely aware of run expectancy, all that stuff. The last decade has been upstairs for him, three different organizations. He knows all that. And I would tend to guess over the course of his time with the Sox, he will bunt less than he did 30 years ago. He knows all that. But I also agree with him. There are times to bunt. I think you guys would probably agree, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, you don't take into account anything about the hitter when you just go by run expectancy. What if Mendek had been 0 for 50? Well, then that makes a little bit more sense, right? Like,
sure.
Guy struggling, or if he's really hot, then you don't bunt. Like, there's game things that you do take into account that are not part of the analytic equation. But I think the answer is any manager that bunts as much as he did or people did 10, 15, 20 years ago is probably making a mistake. We agree there should be less bunting. It doesn't mean there should be zero.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
it doesn't.
Agreed.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Jess, isn't it nice when the Cubs play on the West Coast and they have a 6 o'clock game yesterday instead of the 9 o'clock game?
For old people like you and me,
yes.
Fred, it is nice.
It was very nice. I was
yes.
able to go to, the game was over by like 9:30, you know.
Yes. I mean, here's the thing. When you lose, here's the thing, okay, with the Zoom. A late night, like Thursday and Friday night, late night Zooms after a loss. You know, David Ross isn't exactly, and now it's late night here, obviously,
yeah.
not so much there. But, you know what I'm saying, it's not, it doesn't lend itself to great back and forth. Everybody wants, you know, the people
everybody
in Chicago want
to
get the hell
yeah.
to bed. And people in San Francisco are on deadline, so it wasn't like the most informative late night Zooms on Thursday and Friday, that's for sure.
What?
Now, you got to avoid the sweep today, though, right?
Yeah.
Hendricks got to beat Cueto. Got to avoid the sweep. You can't get swept in four games. That's not good.
One last thing, and
yeah.
You cover the Cubs more than you cover the White Sox. You cover
yeah.
the Cubs more than anybody. Were you surprised about the Rizzo-Contreras thing in the dugout the other day?
I mean, a little bit, but not really. I guess maybe I should say I might go the other way. I'm surprised over 5-6 years there hasn't been a few more public moments with Contreras, and I don't say this in a negative way.
No,
he's emotional. He wears his heart on his sleeve. That's bound to during the game. Not away from the game, he's totally fine. But during the game, I would think that might rub some people the wrong way. First of all, I know it's rubbed umpires the wrong way. I know it's rubbed the opponent the wrong way. I would imagine once in a blue moon it can rub teammates the wrong way. And I'm not even saying Contreras was in the wrong. I have no idea what happened.
Right.
Like, they haven't talked about it. I'm sure it was nothing. You know, it's usual baseball stuff. But the one thing I do about Wilson know about Wilson is he can tick off umpires from time to time, and that's a very dangerous thing. I'm sure Fred and Xander, you've criticized umpires. They can hold grudges.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
Emotional. And the one guy you can't, get into it with is the catcher,
because
he affects so much. So I don't know if that was the case, but I think players want in general him to just play with emotion, but don't go too far. And again, I'm not blaming Contreras because I don't know what happened.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Jess, enjoy the day. We will talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, buddy.
Okay, guys, have a good one.
Jesse Rogers, you follow him, and he'll get a chance to talk to players at batting practice now coming up on Tuesday.
He might be the only one.
He may be. He may be there, and he'll just say, hey, looking for a friend. I'm Jesse Rogers. We come back. We'll have the results of our rock poll. Also, I'll let you know why Ozzie Guillen was really, really mad yesterday before the game started.
He had a good reason.
Yeah, too. He had a really good reason, I think. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's Fred and Xander here on ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000. Now, back to more Fred and Xander on the all-new ESPN Chicago app.
All right, the Sox will go for another win. Try to avoid the sweep. Pre-game up at 12:30.
No, not
here.
The sweep. They're trying to win 3 of 4.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They won. The first two. Yeah. Yeah. It's your allergy medication.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. No allergy
it's
medication today.
In.
Day
yeah.
one.
Uh huh.
Heading to an allergy test.
Yeah. Cubs will try to avoid the sweep.
That's
there.
What they're
you
doing.
Go.
There we go.
There
yes.
you go.
All right. 12:30 pre-game with Connor McKnight here on ESPN 1000. We've got a rock poll to wrap up. I was asking this because Vince Neil lost his voice with Motley Crue. They're supposed to go on a reunion tour. It's postponed to next year. So if you could not care, fill in the blank, I could not care less if blank ever toured again. Choices, Aerosmith, and they may not tour again. Motley Crue, Pink Floyd, Led Zeppelin. We go to Tyler for the poll results.
I think Motley Crue is going to win.
And you are correct.
Yeah, I would.
It's probably because they're in the news, but 44%, followed up by Aerosmith at 23%,
ooh.
Pink Floyd at 20%, and Led Zeppelin at 12%.
See, now people want Led Zeppelin, which I don't blame them. It's not going to happen. But yeah, Motley Crue, they retired, and they should have stayed retired. But it's all about this.
Yeah,
it's all about the money.
I saw Aerosmith enough.
I did too.
And I don't know that you could ever see Pink Floyd enough. I mean, on the way home, I could just listen to Animals and,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, but Pink Floyd hasn't been Pink Floyd.
No, I know.
For
a long
40
time.
Years, actually.
Yeah, for a long time.
They broke up in the early 80s. So.
Yesterday, on the pregame show on NBC Sports Chicago, Ozzie Guillen was red hot. And Ozzie Guillen was upset because when Joe West set the record for the most games umpired in the history of baseball, the commissioner was here, and a bunch of other people were here.
Yeah, we had a couple people from the station and, went to a fancy party.
Yeah, celebrities and all that kind of stuff. And Mark Eaton, the former center for the Utah Jazz, was at the party. He died a day later in a bicycle accident.
Yep.
And so they had a big thing, and the commissioner was here. Ozzie Guillen was so mad because yesterday Tony La Russa had a chance to pass up John McGraw as the second most wins as a Major League Baseball manager. He'll never catch Connie Mack. So, but there was no commissioner wasn't here. There was nothing special. There was no allotment, nothing. And he said, now after they lost yesterday,
they'll have time to scramble the Jets, so to speak.
He said, they have time to figure it out. I'll bet they still don't. So I don't know what, I don't know if they've made any plans or anything. Because Tony was great the other day, because after he tied it, he said, I'll talk about the record after I get the record.
Right.
I'm not going to talk about it after I tie it and then talk about it again after I break it.
Yeah.
And which was a cool thing for him to do. So we'll see how the White Sox do.
Tied it, everybody should be on notice and there should be some kind of official recognition.
And again, after tomorrow when I'm here with Hanley, I'll talk about how managers don't mean anything.
Right. You have a habit of doing that.
Uh-huh. That's what I'll do.
It's all convenient.
Yeah. I'm here from 2 to 6. It's the golf outing tomorrow, the Grip It and Sip It out at the golf course. Out at Seven Bridges in Woodridge.
See, my brain is gone. Now yours is gone.
Thanks a lot. We'll talk to you guys all later. Thanks to Tyler. It is White Sox pregame coming up on ESPN 1000.